Well, hello there, wonderful teachers. I want to invite you to an event we're doing this summer. It's in Cincinnati, Ohio, so you have to be able to make it there, but it might be worth traveling for if you're able to. It's happening on July 20th and 21st, so that's over a weekend, and it's going to be the best 2 days for teachers. We're going to have a ton of fun. We're going to learn a lot about pedagogy and creative teaching and business. We have two fabulous guest speakers, and we're even going to finish with an optional Ceilidh. That's an Irish dancing party. So I hope you'll be able to join me. Just go to vibrantmusicteaching.com/turbo. That's .com/TURBO24. The numbers 24. I hope you'll check it out. View all the details there, and I hope to see you in Cincinnati in July. On with the episode.
Vibrant music teaching. Proven and practical tips, strategies, and ideas for music teachers.
This is the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast. I'm Nicola Canton, and today we're talking about our Silent Film Piano Festival that we ran last year. Hello, beautiful teachers. Today on the blog, I'm sharing the behind-the-scenes look at everything that went into our Silent Film Piano Festival. I hope it's useful. This is a good companion to that, so you could definitely, if you are running your own Silent Film Piano Festival or some kind of silent film event, or you're just curious, you just want to have a nosy, then I think the blog post and this podcast would go well together. They complement each other well. So today on this show, I'm going to be sharing with you some recordings that I originally did on YouTube. So here's the thing. I was thinking, as I was putting together this podcast to go along with the blog post, I was like, oh, I'll record it. And I was thinking about it. And then I thought, no, is it actually going to be better if I share these YouTube clips? So around when we did our Silent Film Piano Festival, which was last November, I did a YouTube live before and after. So there was a few days before I did, like, here was everything that went into the setup and we don't know how it's going to go. And then afterwards I did, okay, here's how it went and here's what I would do differently. And I thought it would be really useful as a reference to have both together here on the podcast. So that's what we're going to do. So you're going to hear the first one, which is before the event happened and how I was feeling about it and all the planning that went into it. And then I'll come back and introduce the second one, which is the after. All right, so let me set the stage for this. This Silent Film Piano Festival, as I've called it, is going to be on this Sunday. Something we're running through the studio and for some external students as well. So what I'd like to do is just give you the full walkthrough as best as I can manage from the beginning of me thinking about planning this. Okay, so I'm going to take you all the way back to March. I was attending the MTNA conference in Reno, Nevada. There was a booth there, which was from, they were called Silent Film Celebration. And it was this idea that was originally started, as far as I'm aware, this is the best of my knowledge, okay, started out of the Utah MTA. So a group of teachers there started putting this on as part of the Music Teachers Association of Utah. And they've been running it, I believe, for a few years. And then recently they, or a couple of them, have decided to try and make these materials available to other teachers and sort of started a little business selling materials that are useful for running one of these events and helping people put it on. So I had the pleasure of visiting their booth, chatting to them about it, and then also attending their showcase session where they played through some of the pieces and explained how they set it up with two pianos, etc. So I'll give you the basic rundown of what they sort of talk about. Again, their website is silentfilmcelebration.com. Silent Film Celebration. So if you want to look them up, you can. And what they have on their website are, like, they have for sale, I can't remember what they call them, like director's packets or something, but it's basically a breakdown of the scenes in certain films so that you have all the timestamps and everything. You don't have to work that out for yourself. And then they also sell music that you can use for it at various levels. And those are arrangements of a book of music that was put together in the 20s, I believe, for people doing this job of playing the incidental music in cinemas with silent films that were playing, right? Pianists who had to do this job. That is what they do. And they explained in their session about how they kind of set it up. And one of the core things, which maybe I would have come to this conclusion myself, but it was great to just have the information right away. They have two pianos set up. That's the key to making this work. So the setup is you're playing a film. Each student is tasked with playing the backing music for one scene. So the original person doing this job would have played the whole film. We're not asking students to do a whole film each. We're asking them to do one scene, which is, let's say, between 30 seconds and a minute and 30 seconds, something like that. They're playing for one scene. For example, it starts when the guy gets on his motorbike and it stops when he gets off his motorbike, to give you an example. One bit of the film. There's two pianos because scene one, the student is playing at the piano. Scene two, the student picks up at the other piano. And at the same time as they're playing scene two, the piano one, as we'll call it, piano A, that student who played scene one gets up, gets out of the way, and the student who's going to play scene three sits down, so that you're alternating back and forth between the two pianos. Hopefully I've explained that clearly. Obviously I don't have pianos here to show you, but hopefully you get the idea of what I'm saying. So that's one of the core facts I think you need to get out of the way and know, and they talk you through that. They talked us through that in our session at MTNA, and they talk about it on the website as well, I believe. That's where I got the idea, and I started thinking, this would be really cool. I'd actually thought about this before, but not like 20 silent films, just films and some way of performing with a film or something. Like I had this as a vague, maybe one day we'll do this. But this started to take shape as, no, we'll do it like this pretty much with some tweaks to make it our own. So I started to plan from there. And it just shows how it's worth at any of these conferences getting up at 8 a.m. and being on time for that first session. It is easier when you're jet lagged and you're waking up at 4 a.m. anyway, but it was worth it. I went to that session at 8 a.m. and it was probably the biggest takeaway that I had that was very concrete from that conference that I went home and straight away was like, okay, let's see if we can do this. So let me know if there's any questions as I go through, but I'll walk you through my whole process. So I started to plan. And the first thing I did was I started to look at venues. Because I know in Dublin, that's where things fall down. And that might not be the case where you are. Maybe, you know, it's easy to get local businesses to sort things out with you and whatever. It is not easy to find venues for anything here, probably because our real estate is just a total mess. So I started looking at venues and I said to myself, okay, I wonder if I could contact some of the independent cinemas, so like the ones that aren't big chains. That's not of anything about against the chains, I just thought it would be easier probably to work with the private ones. So I got in touch with a few of them, said, hey, how much would this be? Would you let us do this? And how much would it be? Because I had no idea what they were going to say. I had a hunch it was going to be expensive, but I didn't know if it was out of our budget as expensive or just, you know, a big considerable chunk of money that we could do as a business. Now, keep in mind here that I'm running a studio with me and three other teachers. We have 70 students, so it's not like I have 20 kids. But I got in touch with a few. Some cinemas were friendlier than others. I mean, they were all fine. They were all professional, but some were friendlier than others. And the friendliest, the easiest to deal with, who are absolutely lovely, is the best cinema in Dublin. So that just shows you something. So I've ended up going with them. They will not have been the cheapest, but from the prices I got back from other people, it wasn't a huge difference. It is going to be a big expense anyway if you're hiring a cinema. So I ended up going with them. Now, the reason that's extra awesome is we're playing silent films from the 20s. So we're playing two Buster Keaton short films. I'll talk more later about the films. But yeah, they're two 20-minute films. They're from the 1920s. One is 1920, one is 1921, as it happens. And this cinema originally opened in 1923. In my childhood, it was an absolute wreck. It was horrible. Like this, it was kind of a joke to say you were going to go to this cinema. I don't want to be rude to them, but it's different people running it now. So it was, yeah, a mess. There was holes in the ceiling, like the roof. There was pigeons flying in, like sticky floors, the whole thing. It was a total mess. You basically went there if you didn't have another option in my childhood. Then it closed down and then somebody bought it and restored it to its original or something like the original 1920s glamour. So it is done up so lusciously, like it is just beautiful. It's all velvet armchairs and fancy sort of art deco kind of looking-ish. It's just a one-screen cinema, so like you're just renting the whole thing. And it's kind of like a theater, like there's a balcony level and stuff. So it's just the dream. Yeah, it's absolutely the dream to do this event there. And it's the kind of thing where when I told my students we were going to do this, and I told them where it was going to be, which is the cinema's called the Stella, okay? I told them we're going to do this, and I said, guess where we're doing it? And they said, you know, downstairs here with your projector, because we've done things there before, like in my living room, the projector. And I said, no. And they said, in a real cinema. I said, yeah. And they guessed another one. I'm like, no. No, it's not that one either. No, it's not that one either. And they would realize it was the Stella and just like gasp. It was so fun. Anyway, so that's where it's going to be. And it's not cheap, but it's worth it to go all out. If we're going to do this event and it's not going to be cheap anyway, we might as well spend that tiny little bit more and go with something that's really perfect for what we're doing. Do you remember? Probably not, Serena, because you grew up in a different part, right? But do you ever go to the Stella when you were younger? It was not a nice place to be. Anyway, yeah, so that's where I started. Got the venue, went there to meet with them. They were just as lovely as they'd been over the email and like really accommodating. Just a wonderful, wonderful group. Found a date that I thought would work. In terms of the cost, they have different rates, the way it works for them. This might not be the case for you, and you don't have to do this in a cinema, by the way. It was just the ideal for me. They have different rates based on whether it's like a weekday morning, a weekend morning, or an afternoon evening. Because obviously they have to charge a lot more for the afternoon evening because you're cutting off all their revenue for that time. The weekday morning would have been the most affordable, but that only would have worked if it was during Halloween break. So I surveyed the parents in my studio and said, listen, give you a vague idea of what it is I'm trying to do here. It's going to be really epic. Here's when we could do it. It could be a weekday during Halloween break, as we call it, or it could be a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning. Which of these could you do? And overwhelmingly, they wanted a Saturday or Sunday, and ideally Sunday. So that's what we went with, because I wanted as many students to take advantage of it as possible. So then I decided to limit the age. That's the next sort of step I took. Booked my venue, you know, made sure it secured the date, and decided on my age. And for me, it's ages 7 and up. So we have younger students in my studio, but I thought, for this, no. It's not going to be a good experience for them. If you have a 6 or 5 or 4-year-old and they're in a dark cinema and you do your best to explain to them what it's going to be like beforehand, but really the chances of them balking at the last minute and just not doing it was too high. So I thought, okay, this is going to be ages 7 and up. And also if we have a 7-year-old who I think this might not be great for, I'm just going to have that conversation with the parent. I decided on that, and then I made the announcement in our newsletter. So our newsletter goes out towards the end of May, and I put this in the newsletter as like our exciting thing that's happening next year. Photo of the inside of the Stella, you know, it looked beautiful and all of that, and told them about it. Okay. I had to think about the films. Or along the way, I had to think about the films. Not that I thought about them at the last minute, but we're talking last May, and that's when I decided, okay, I have to finalize these films and sort this out. Now, if you are not where I am, if you are in fact in the US, then it is likely that the silent films you'll want to use are out of copyright. Copyright laws vary, and it's based on the country where you are, not the country where they originated, okay? So when I looked into this, I discovered we are going to have to pay to license the films here, because our copyright laws are different. So, you know, the Silent Film Celebration people out of Utah, they were saying these are in the public domain. They're not for us. So just be clear on that distinction. If you hire a cinema, obviously they're going to make sure with you of what you're doing, because they don't want to get in trouble. So anyway, we had to do that. There's a company that we were able to hire them through, and actually the cinema sorted all that out because they deal with them a lot. So they're just adding that to our invoice. It's not a huge cost, but, you know, it's not nothing. So we did have to factor that in. So we're licensing 2 films off them. That means they provide the files in the correct format for the cinema. It's a file format I've never heard of before. So I'm glad they're doing that and we don't have to convert something. The cinema guys told me, well, they can convert it from like an MP4, but it takes a day to convert. I'm like, what? How does anything take a day to convert these days? Anyway, that was new information for me. So, screwed the films. That wasn't too headache-taking. I just had to find out where to license them, talk to the cinema about that. They said they would look after it. That's great. Now, hopefully all this works out the way I'm saying. As I said, this is on Sunday. This is a preview. Something might go wrong. We'll have to see what happens. But hopefully it's all going to go fine. So there was that. Now, here's where we get to my headache. And some of you who watched the show recently know that this has been a headache for me, which is sorting out the sound. So I'm not like an audiophile in terms of cables and speakers and nonsense. No, it's not nonsense. It's just, it's not something I'm super interested in. And I don't know a lot about it. I'm not a gigging musician. It's not something I have a lot of experience with. So I have had to go back and forth in terms of the cables we need and the setup. It all got sorted. That's all I'll say about that. And it's going to be different for every venue you use. So I'm not going to give you any advice. But I did get it sorted out. I will give you one piece of advice, which is if you're ever stuck for cables and what cables you should use, Thomann, which is a German music website, have a great support team who will actually help you figure out what cables you need. So they're really lovely. So that's thomann.de. Just if you're ever like, who do I even ask about this? That's one option. You can go to their support team. And then obviously, I would recommend buying the cables from them at the end of it to be nice, but they do it as a free support service. It's not like you have to then buy the cables. So yeah, sorted out the sound, did a rehearsal of that. That meant lugging the two digital pianos in there, but we got it sorted. Okay, so along the way, around last May, June, is when I decided to open this up to other teachers. Now, I didn't publicize this hugely. I just mentioned it a couple of times, a couple of places, and in particular, I emailed VMT members, Vibrant Music Teaching members, who I know are in Ireland. And, you know, that's, Ireland isn't a very big country, so we don't have a very big population. So that was a few teachers, emailed them, and a few of them were interested. So we have three external teachers who've submitted students for this, just a few students each, basically. And so it's largely our students from our studio, from Colourful Keys, but we do have a chunk of students that are external as well, which I believe just adds an extra fun element to it and meant we charge a small fee for that. So that's going towards some of the cost of the venue. It's not covering it at all because I didn't want to charge too much. I really wanted people to participate and it to be open, not cost prohibitive for them. So, but it does help to offset some of that cost. So I opened it up to other teachers. I set up a simple form for that, with a payment attached. Then I set the deadline for that as September 30th. So the Silent Film thing, Piano Festival, our event is this Sunday, which is November 12th. So the last possible date they could sign up was the end of September, because obviously they then need to prepare their music for it. So anything under 6 weeks, I was like, that's silly. They're not going to be able to prepare adequately for the event if it's after that. So that was the deadline. That was the deadline for my own students as well, to let me know whether they were available, the parents to let me know whether the students were available. So I had a simple Google form for that and they just filled out, you know, yes or no. It's not like there's different times or anything. It's just one event. So to tell them when it is, if they're available, great. If they're not, that's sad, but there'll be another event. For all of our students, I went about assigning the pieces to the students. So we used some of the pieces from Silent Film Celebration. And they have these books and we had purchased some of those. So we used some of those pieces, the simplified versions, but even they now have an even easier level, although it's still not super easy. So for students who are really beginners, they weren't going to play like those authentic pieces. So what I had done was I got in touch with several independent composers, Jennifer Eklund, June Armstrong, someone else, a few different people anyway, who have ended up on our program, Samantha Coates as well, and Brock Chart. That's the four composers I got in touch with and said, listen, would you mind, can you give me written permission for us to use your music in this event? And of course, all of them said yes. I mean, why would they say no? But technically, you do need that permission because it is a public event. It's in a public space. It's not just even parents in my studio. It's parents from other studios, etc. So I made sure to get the permission and assign students pieces that made sense for their level. You know, get to work enforcing the practice or encouraging the practice, making sure they were going to be prepared. Some of them had started these pieces before, or they were pieces they already knew, and some were brand new. So the level was appropriate to that fact. In the midst of that, in October, I sent out an email for my students and to the other teachers who have submitted students for this, that they could purchase extra tickets. So the deal is that every student gets one extra seat. So they get a seat for themselves and a chaperone, essentially one person to come with them, one guest. So if they want anything more than that, like if the whole family wants to come or whatever, they had to purchase those tickets. I put them up for €15. To give you some context, seats in the Stella in general are €20. So that just gives you a frame of reference. They're slightly cheaper than our the standard price of a ticket in the cinema. So it's a pretty good deal, but obviously we do need to make it make sense, some sense financially, claw back some of the money. But it was mainly as a way to make sure we had exact numbers because space is limited. And I wanted to assign the tickets to people. So I got them to purchase extra tickets, and then I started assigning the seating. So I got the seating plan image just from the cinema, and I've been just marking in the groups and trying to keep people together with the student they're coming with into the plan, keeping track of that on a spreadsheet as well. So I marked off on the visual and write down on the spreadsheet, you know, K1 and K2 or whatever their seats are going to be, and then adding on the extra tickets and moving people around as I need to try and keep people together. So at the moment, the ground floor of the cinema is full. So I put up a warning on the page for the extra tickets that if they purchase any from now on or this week, since a few days ago, they'll be in the balcony level, which is still, you know, still a good seat. You can still see and everything, but I prioritize those who bought tickets earlier. So that's some of the logistics. In the meantime, our students have been practicing their pieces, obviously. We've been giving them a simpler piece if they aren't getting there in time. You know, we've been keeping a close eye on that, starting to practice with the film. Okay, so they have their scene. Let's say it's from 2 minutes 37 to 3 minutes 47, something like that. And then I pull it up on my iPad and I put that on the piano, and I start a little bit before their scene, and they need to know what it looks like at the start of their scene. So what's actually happening in the film, and what's like this still image, if we take one, that moment when you're supposed to start playing, what would that look like? And so they've been practicing again and again and again of coming in exactly when their scene starts and stopping when it stops. So they know those two moments of what those two elements look like, so that they can come in on time and stop on time. So the difference about this type of performance versus most other recitals is you're not going to finish your piece necessarily. You have to have a flexible approach based on time. Okay, so they have to prepare. If I'm playing slower than I expected to, than I planned to, and it's coming to the end of my scene and I'm nowhere close to the end, what am I going to play? Like practicing a cadence that you can just throw in there to sound like the end of your scene, even though it's not the end of your piece. Or if you have extra time, as is more likely because students play faster under pressure, which bit are you going to repeat? And then the other elements we've been practicing are, okay, if the person before you doesn't stop playing, you're going to just interrupt them. You're going to play even though they haven't stopped, but it's the start of your scene, so you just start. If the person before you stops too early, then you're going to start early because it's a team effort and it's not their fault. Like, they stopped early, whatever. We're not going to blame them. We're just going to chip in and repeat some part of your piece so that we fill that time, because the most important part is keeping the music going the whole time. Okay, so that's our goal. So hopefully that's what happens this Sunday. We'll see. And then after they finish their piece, they need to get up quickly and quietly and go to the other side. So I've organized it that, this sounds like a lot, right? It has been a lot to put together. But when I say it all in one go, I'm like, whoa, there's so many elements here. Anyway, so in terms of like the paperwork I've organized, every student has a ticket that has their seats on it. So they'll get that when they come in, along with the program That's the easy part because it's like a recital, you know, it's a program, listed in order, all that stuff with their pieces and everything. And then I've also organized badges, labels. They're just printed on address labels and they say the student name and their scene number. So it says like Nicola Canton 1 or whatever my scene number is, because they're going to queue up beside the pianos, I should say, in order. So that's going to make it really easy for them to queue up in order. And then, you know, scene 1 and 2 will be sitting at the piano at the start, 3 and 4 will sit down, and they move to the other side. So they're kind of, you know, it's kind of a queue, really. So that's how that's going to work. And they need to get up quickly and quietly after they finish their piece and move to the other side. Hopefully they'll do that. As you can tell, I always whisper that to emphasize the quietly part. So we've talked about, you know, don't rustle your sheet music, etc. Another reason why I had to make this age of 7 and up. There was no way I was going to get 5-year-olds to do this. Then this week I've been sending out reminder emails to the parents, letting them know, hey, it's on this Sunday. Like, don't forget, you need to be here there at this time. The film starts at this time and will be finished by this time. Parents always want to know when things are over in case they have other commitments. You know, I think that's fair enough. Giving them a good idea of that. And also reminding them that if they need extra tickets, they have to purchase them. Now, my backup plan, if they arrive and they haven't purchased, they just arrive, they haven't read any of my emails, and they say, oh, I assume the whole family could come or whatever, then they'll sit on the balcony level. We do have extra seating there. So, yes, exactly, Shiva. I've told them that. So if they're an odd number, they'll be sitting at piano A, let's call it, and an even number will be piano B. They're actually... Piano A will be the Kawai and piano B will be the Yamaha. They do sound slightly different, but hey, oh, I'm not going to buy another digital piano just for this event. Good, I'm glad. Hopefully I've given enough detail to give you a good idea of how this is working. The practice has been interesting and I think it's been a really good thing to prepare for my students. As we've said, it's very different. It's time-based. It's not piece-based. So... they need to finish on time. They need to keep with the atmosphere. When I have, like, there's a couple of cases where I have buddy students or something that are, I put their scenes back to back so they could practice together. And we've actually done a little modulation at the end of one student's piece to go into the next. That's not essential. I'm not expecting it to all sound like super put together and professional or anything. Like, the pieces will sometimes sound a bit at odds with each other when one student takes over. I think that's fine. But where we have those opportunities, we have done that little, you know, modulation thing to get to the next piece or, you know, making things match each other in certain ways. And it's been really fun. And it's been fun as well to see the approach of the other, like the external teachers, all of whom I know, at least digitally, I know them to chat to online. So it's been interesting to see their different approaches. One of the teachers, a lot of her students are really beginners, and so they've composed their own pieces, and I think that's awesome. Like, it, the composers, this is them and their teacher, you know, which is lovely. So they've composed something to match their scene from scratch. That's awesome. And then some have taken a piece that they can already play, you know, more intermediate students, and then adapted that to suit the scene and etc. So it's been really fun to see that as well, to see what other teachers do. Because I know how I manage things, but, you know, you can always learn from other teachers and how they do it. And I think a lot of the students are really excited. Some are nervous, of course, but I think it's going to go well. Our other little backup plan is one of the teachers who works here is the designated stand behind the piano and jump in if no one's playing anything person. So she's going to be standing right there. If a student, like, stops too early and the other one doesn't start, or if a student doesn't show up or something happens, she's going to jump in and, you know, improvise a few chords and make up the extra time. So that's the plan. Okay, so I hope that's given you a good overview. Bit of a different show today as I talk you through this process and how it's been to set it up. But yeah, hopefully it gives you behind the scenes. Maybe it'll inspire you to try one. As I said, I'm going to come back next week with the after. With the, like, lessons learned, here's what I would have done differently, here's what didn't work. Hopefully nothing major doesn't work, but you never know. These things happen. So my plan is to come back next week with that and let you know what I might do differently, whether I'm thinking about doing this again. I've no idea. We definitely can't afford to do it every year. That's the honest truth. But Maybe it becomes a biannual thing if it goes really well, or maybe it's just a one-off and we just enjoy it for that. But that all, I haven't gone through in terms of like our camera recording and taking photos. That's all the same as I run my recitals, so that hasn't been too much to set up. But yeah, we'll definitely do a debrief afterward next week on the show, and I've got your votes for if we need to switch it, we'll switch to Thursday, so we'll go with that. It's not switching next week though, so don't worry. We'll stick with Wednesday show as long as we can, and then if I need to change, we'll change at the same time on Thursday. Thank you all so much for joining me. I hope this was useful. I hope it was fun to hear about. And thank you for the well wishes that are coming in the chat. I'm sure the students will have a great time. I'm sure it'll go, you know, it doesn't have to be go perfectly or anything, but hopefully we'll all have a good time. And I'll tell you more about that next week. Bye for now. All right, Nicola here in the present podcast mode again. So that was how I was feeling beforehand. Now you're going to hear the live that I recorded the week afterwards. So this will share how everything went on the actual day, as well as some lessons that I'm taking away for if we do this again. Now, you will hear me refer to photos which are on screen. Obviously, you can't see them, but I think they still make sense with the description that I'm giving. So I think they still make sense in the audio. If you do want to check out the original video, of course, it's on YouTube, so you can go watch that there to your heart's content. Okay, let's dive into the afterwards. We'll pick up where we left off, which was last week on the show. We were talking about all the preparation I'd done. So what was left to do was go over my packing list many more times, make sure I had a full list of everything I needed to bring with me, because I needed to go there on the Sunday morning. We got into the Stella at 10, at 9, and the doors opened to students at 10. Now, that was my choice. We would have been allowed in earlier if I'd asked for it, but I just thought, look, an hour is going to be enough time to set up, and I don't want to be just sitting around twiddling our thumbs for too long. So it was a tight enough timeline that we needed to be organized before we went there. We had our two digital pianos with us, and their stands, which we disassembled. So I got my husband to, with me, disassemble them, because I've always put them together before, so they're not complicated, but I just wanted him to be familiar. So we took them apart together and packed them into the car, and then it was his job to put them back together when we got to the cinema. We have a small car, as is normal in Ireland, so if you had, you know, a big truck or whatever, maybe you would just be able to take them as is, or just take off the keyboard part, the piano part, and keep the stand together, and that would save you some time. But there was no way that was going to happen. We have a little Yaris hybrid, so not happening. We took it all apart, put them in the car. Then we had obviously the screwdrivers to put them back together. We had our two duet benches, which are pretty substantial. I have these big duet benches here, and I always like to take them because they're just so much nicer than standard benches. So we do have like single benches and stuff, but some people were playing duets their teachers, and yeah, these benches are just lovely. So we brought those with us. They're wider than a normal duet bench size, so that they're, yeah, big. Then we had clip-on lamps, so they're little IKEA ones. I can grab one. Sorry, the plug got stuck, but I wanted to show you what I mean. These are just little clip-on guys, okay, and I just clipped them onto the music stands. They're from IKEA. As far as I remember, they were like 15 euro, maybe less, but we have two of them. We brought those with us, and we also brought two more lamps because I wasn't convinced that that was going to be enough light. Obviously, it's a cinema, so it's dark, okay? So I brought two extra lamps. It turned out that was enough, so we didn't need the extra lamps. That was fine. An extension cord. I have like a builder's style one that's like really long, so I brought that just in case. This list, by the way, is largely applicable to recitals and stuff. If you're, yeah, anything you might not have thought of, always bring extension cords with me anywhere I go, just in case, for like cameras and stuff, even if I don't have digital pianos with me. Then we had our cables to connect the pianos to the cinema sound system. Those are like the audio jack cables, the ones we needed. We had tested that beforehand. I brought my iPad with me just in case someone forgot their sheet music, and most things I could have like I had online or could have bought last minute online if we were really in a pinch. I didn't think that was going to be necessary, but I brought it. It wasn't necessary. I didn't touch it for the whole show, which is a good thing. Okay, then I had the programs of, you know, what students were playing and what they were playing. And I had the tickets and the stickers organized in envelopes. So I had an envelope for each student with their name on the front. I printed them out on labels, stuck them on the envelope. Then inside was a sticker with the student's name and scene number, which they were going to stick here. That was just like an address label type sticker. That was so that we could organize them in the lineup. And so they had to put that on as their little badge when they arrived. And then they had a ticket that said their seat numbers for them and anyone else in their party. So that was all organized in envelopes, and I'd made sure to put them in alphabetical order and put them in a box that our people doing check-in could use and not get them mixed up. I also had masking tape with me. I always have tape with me at any recital. Anyone else for that? I just feel you always have to have some kind of spare paper. I had spare labels with me, a marker, a pen, and masking tape. Those are just like, no matter what's happening, I'm bringing those things. Okay, and then I had my camera for videoing the event and the tripod for that, which is actually the one I'm using right now for this, and microphone. So I just brought I have the Rode Go 2 wireless microphone. It's just what I have anyway, for other reasons. But it's nice and simple and discreet and just plugs into my camera. And then there's the actual microphones. And I literally just put them on the like little poof thing that was behind the piano. So I didn't have any kind of fancy microphone setup, but it worked fine. And then I had the second camera. I have another mirrorless camera. Anyway, with interchangeable lens. I kind of have a pair of Sony cameras, and the other one was brought with us as well. That was for taking photos. So that, again, is my husband's job. So he was put the pianos together and take photos. Those were his two big jobs, and he did great. That's pretty much my list. Yes, I feel the same way. I hope everyone else didn't get bored by my list, but it's good to get the details, right? That's what you're here for. So I have a few photos to kind of show to you so you can get a sense of what it was like on the day. So this is two of the teachers who work here. They were doing the check-in. So my husband took a photo of them doing the check-in, which is great. So see, one of them has a clipboard that has the full list of all the students and their seats in case anyone lost their ticket. And also just so they could find their name really easily. Behind them on our right-hand side, as we're looking at it, you'll see a little yellow box. That's where the envelopes are with the students' stickers and their tickets inside. So yeah, that was sort of the check-in at the front of the cinema. And I told them, like, make sure nobody comes in without checking in with you. It's kind of handy that, like, the entrance is kind of a small corridor. Like, it's not the full width at the front. So people were kind of funneled in and it was clear that they were supposed to check in. If it had been a more open room, I feel we would have needed a sign for the check-in desk. But with the setup the way it was, I knew it was going to work for them to just like both stand at a little bit in front of the doors so that people would naturally form a queue and just check in there. So that's the check-in area. Then, so I'll show you the audience area as they started to fill up. This is when people dripped in. I was surprised. I don't know why I was surprised, because it always happens every recital. Lots of people were earlier. They came earlier than 10. So I said, doors open at 10. Film starts at 10:30. People came at like 9:40, 9:45. Luckily, we were ready. But yeah, they were like, it wasn't just one family. It was quite a few. So the audience started filling up and I told them, just relax. Even if you're playing the first film, just relax for now. Don't come up here and line up because you're going to be standing there for 45 minutes. So that won't help. That'll lead to a lot of wriggles, right? Then I'll show you our piano setup. So this is the area with the two pianos. So you can kind of see in the top right hand corner there, you can see the screen is right there. So I ended up angling them. My original plan was for both of them to be straight, but I found it was better if I angled them like that. It's easier to kind of get around. The only downside of having such lovely big benches is they do sometimes get in the way, but they're also more comfortable to sit on. So a little bit of this, a little bit of that, right? But that was our piano setup. And as you can see, there's the two little IKEA clip-on lights right there as well. I was surprised no one accidentally hit at them and had them fall off the stand. Like, I was expecting someone to hit it with their sheet music by mistake and like knock it a bit, but no one did, which was amazing because they're not that sturdy. They're decent, but they're not like that clamped on. Yeah, let me know if you have any questions as we go through. Let me see. Okay, this is the front area where people are queuing up to get their treats, etc. You can see at the back there, there's a bit of a queue that's from the front door to the kind of check-in area. And then they were queuing to get treats and stuff like that before the film. As part of the expense of the venue, as part of the venue hire, they had like a flat fee and then a minimum spend. I was expecting that we would end up covering some of the minimum spend, like that people wouldn't actually reach that and that we would have to cover the difference then, right? Similar to hiring like a nightclub for a birthday party, something like that. You'd only have a minimum spend. But we actually very nearly reached it and the Stella were like, that's fine. That's close enough. So that was really good because it was a little bit less expense for us. So that was great. Okay, and then from there, they queued up to enter the screen. Stella had their own staff at the start of the auditorium there, showing people to their seats. It's quite a dark cinema. It's quite hard to see the seating numbers and letters, like more than most other theatres, I think. So it was great to have their staff who actually know where everything is and could help us. Yeah, and they managed all of that. So that was awesome. Just show you the view from the balcony as well. So there is a balcony level in the Stella Cinema and we did have some people up there. So we had filled the ground floor and then a couple of rows of the balcony. And that's also where we put surprise extras. So people who hadn't told us, hadn't booked the tickets in advance, but like showed up with an extra person, we had the extra seats in the balcony for them. Okay, and then finishing off with the photos and the kind of setup here. So this is myself and Laura. I just think it's a cute photo. So we're both looking up at the screen there so you can see where we're sitting. I brought two little stools with me and we basically sat there so that we were right there if anyone needed help or if we needed to jump in with something, fix something, anything like that. So that was a handy spot for us. It's just a different view of that. So you can see we've got our two little stools and that's the camera in the right corner there. As you're looking at it, that's the video being taken. Of course, the video wasn't going to be like amazingly clear because it's dark, but I think it turned out well. I finished the editing for that today. Okay, and then we have the students getting ready. So this is the first film and they just lined up along the wall like this. So they were in order of their numbers. Laura, the other teacher that works here, who was helping me on the piano side of things, she checked their numbers and then I double checked them that they were all there and all in order. The labels worked exactly as I planned. It's great. So glad I thought of that idea because I don't know how I would have kept everyone in order considering they're not all even our students. So we don't even know, you know, every kid's name. So having the label there was really handy and it worked perfectly. And I was able to just run up and say like 1, 2, 3 like that. And then the students 1 and 2, in this case these two, sat down behind the pianos before we actually started. So the line actually started at 3. 1 and 2 were already sitting at the piano. You know, number 1 played their piece. They got up and got out of the way and number 3 sat down there while 2 was playing their piece. And then they got up and number 3 was playing and number 4 sat at that piano. Hope that makes sense. So you're alternating back and forth between the pianos. That's how it works to keep it flowing. And it worked really, really well. I think those are all the photos I had to show you, just checking. So that gives you a bit of a sense of what the venue was like and how the setup kind of worked. Susan asked, how long did it take the kids to learn the music? Also, how did you split the cost of the silent film? I remember it was rather pricey. Yes, it's a pricey thing. It depends how you run your studio is what I'll say in terms of general advice. Colorful Keys is an all-inclusive studio. So when I do recitals, when I do pretty much anything except students entering exams, which is really completely external to us, we cover that. That's part of our business expenses. So this is another event that's part of our business expenses. The external students who participated paid an entry fee. I believe it was pretty affordable. It was basically the cost of 2 regular cinema tickets, to give you some context. And then students who wanted, our students and other students who wanted to bring more than one guest, paid a ticket fee for that. They bought tickets. So we did offset some of the costs that way, but we definitely footed a large amount of the bill just as a business expense. Okay, so how long did it take the kids to learn the music? That varies so much. It depends what the music was. So this kind of combines with Debbie, your question about music for beginners. I didn't restrict this based on level. So I had students who are, you know, not long into lessons at all, and students who are 6 or 7 or 8 years into lessons as well. But the students had to be at least age 7. And if I had a 7-year-old in my studio who I thought, really, this is going to be tough for them, like they're on the less mature side, or they've just started lessons and I think they're a little bit too lost for this, then I just had a quiet word with the parents and I said, think not this time, like wait another year. But in general, it was for ages 7 and up. And so there's a lot of beginners in that mix. We had some arrangements which are from Silent Film Celebration. They have arranged pieces that are from a book. It's original 1920s incidental music. It's a book that was put together for professionals who did this job. And they rearranged it. I believe the arranger's name is Emily Marsden. She rearranged it into different levels. Now, they're still not super easy. So they have one that I think they call elementary, but it's not beginner friendly. It's still, you know, a little bit awkward in places and they wouldn't have learned that fast. So we generally had students who were like intermediate-ish and up, learn some of this music that's like original and authentic to the role of being an incidental musician in a cinema, because I love that opportunity. And then we had a variety of other music as well for students who that didn't fit with them. So I had asked some independent composers that we could use their music. So I had Samantha Coates' pieces, Jennifer Eklund, one of the external teachers had asked Chrissy Ricker, so we had some of her music as well, June Armstrong, and Brock Chart. Those were the sort of composers that I managed to find something for everyone. So how long did it take them to learn their music? I mean, it depends which piece we're talking about and which student we're talking about. But generally, I had students had to commit that they were definitely doing this by the end of September. So that's not a long time frame, okay? We're talking October and like a week of November. So it had to be at an accessible level if it wasn't something that they had already started on or knew before. So the incidental music, the intermediate students, they had been given that before the summer to start on. Some of them worked on it a lot over the summer. Some didn't. That's what we expected. But they had September to continue working on that. And then other students, they just had a few weeks. That answers the questions. Okay, so I wanted to share a few details about what I might do differently if we do this again. So overall, it was a huge success. Like it went really, really well. For the most part, everything went amazingly smoothly. I made a couple of small mistakes, but that's kind of understandable. I'll explain those in a second. But yeah, so I would make those changes, but I have heard from a lot of people so far that they would love to do it again. So more than any other event I've done, there's been a lot of feedback like do this every year or do this once more or whatever. So we may do it again next year. I'm not going to commit entirely yet, but we may do it again next year. And we may continue expanding this and maybe having more external students and therefore multiple films. For this one, we had 2 short films. We could do it like when I was planning all this out, I had different options in mind that we could have a few different sessions, you know, 2 films, and then those students leave, and then another 2 films as a separate session. So we could expand it and go that way. I do think it's worth doing again, but yeah, we have to look at it and make sure we have the budget for it. So if and when I do this again, some changes. First of all, the toughest part of this really was the seating. The rest of the organization mostly I enjoyed, and I felt like I had it very in hand. Sorting out the seats and allocating them was a bit of a pain because I had ticket sales dripping in up until the morning of. So I could close that, but then I feel like we'd be in more trouble. So I would love to have an actual seating system like you would have when you book a ticket in a cinema or for an airplane or whatever. So I might look into that. But then the other part of me is like, well, actually, I could do it the same way again. And I could make it more efficient because basically when a student is in the first film, they're not in their seat for the first film. And then when a student is in the second film, they're not in their seat for the second film. So we actually could share those seats, which would make it more efficient. It would make it more of a headache for me, which is why I didn't do it this time. But maybe that is a solution to make it more efficient as well. It probably is the right thing to do in terms of the budget and efficiency and also just making the audience always look full. Not that it looked empty, but you know, there's going to be empty spots because the students are all getting ready to play and they stay standing up for the whole film. So yeah, that's something I might think more about. One of the choices I dilly-dallied on was whether I should bring folding chairs and have the students line up sitting or standing without chairs. And I decided on standing, and I think that was the right call. They didn't fidget too much. And I know with folding chairs, kids tend to like fall off them or do silly things, you know what I mean? So I think it was actually less distracting with them standing. And it's only a 20-minute film, so they're able to stand for like half an hour. It's fine. So that was the right choice, I think. One of the unexpected things was that the video was actually a completely different version of the video than what we had practiced with. So it was the same film. The first film we were using was The Boat, a Buster Keaton film from 1921. Because we're in Ireland and because copyright laws here are different, this would be different for any of you in the US. This is definitely different for you. Those films are out of copyright, so you could use the publicly available film that's on YouTube and Vimeo. But we couldn't screen that because it's not out of copyright here. So we had to license it and pay a licensing fee. And therefore the cinema got the files, which are like DC something files, a file format I've never used. They got those directly from the licensor, which is great. It made it totally hands off for me. But then they played the film and it was like remastered. So it looked better than the files that we see online, which are kind of, you know, it had been fixed up and remastered and stuff, which was awesome. But the first film, The Boat, was a full, I think about 9 minutes longer than our version that we had been watching. So different students' scenes, a few of the scenes had extra bits in them, especially the first one. So I was honestly so proud because the student playing for the first scene in the first film, he kept it going the entire scene. Like he kind of looked at me with a side eye at one point, like, really, I'm still playing? Because I was standing right there in case anyone needed me. And I kind of nodded like, yep, keep going, keep going. Because he was doing the right thing. He fills in all of that time. But I'd say it was at least double the length of the scene that he had prepared for. Because there was this whole extra chunk in it. And then that happened to a lesser degree in other scenes where there was a bit extra. And so they ran out of their piece. Yes, we planned the music to go with the scene. For the most part, I chose it. Just in our studio, I just chose it. Some students, we discussed it together, but mostly I just assigned something that made sense and I knew they could play. I don't know what I would do about that. I think I would probably at least ask, because we'd be using different films next time, at least ask the licensing company to tell me the length of the film so that I know whether it's going to be a good chunk longer or not. The second film we used was only a tiny bit. So it was only like two scenes in that were affected at all. That was unexpected, but they dealt with it very well. I think one thing that I will do differently next year, I feel like I did a very good job of training my own students with some things like if the student before you stops too early, start playing anyway, even though it's not supposed to be your scene, start playing early. If they don't stop playing, cut in and interrupt them when it's the start of your scene. Like we're all basing this on what the scene looks like. I think my own students all did that, but I don't think I did a good enough job of communicating that to other teachers so that they could train their students enough. So if we do it again next year or following year or whatever, I will probably put together a video and some examples of drills you can do in lessons so that every student gets the same level of preparation in terms of adapting your scene, like having a part that you repeat if you've got extra time, or having an ending that you can put in early if you need to finish and your piece isn't finished, etc. I'll just have more information for the other teachers, I think, next time. The students paid, Susan. I said that a minute ago, but yeah, the students paid a fee to participate in the event. So each parent set up the form. Like I had a form on my website that the parents filled in and their teacher obviously got a free seat as part of that. Yeah, I think those are the main things I would change. I told you I had one snafu, which was with a couple of the seats. So I told you that this was the hardest part for me to organize was the seat allocation. Maybe I'm still not being clear about this, so I'll just go back to it. There were 3 external teachers participating. All their students paid the student participation fee. So they, each student from their studio who's going to be part of it, filled in the online form, which was on my site, which had the fee attached. Hopefully that's clear. Yeah, the 2 little mistakes I made. So we're with the seating. There was one parent who came up to me and said they had booked 4 tickets and I'd only allocated them 3. So that was just a very basic error in me copying it from like the system where the extra tickets were being bought and copying the number across and putting it as 1 instead of 2. They didn't get too upset about it, thankfully. Obviously, we had the spare seating upstairs, but thankfully they didn't mind too much. They understood. Things happen. The other seating mistake I made, in a way, thankfully, was for my own mother. So I had reserved, or I thought I had reserved, 2 seats for my mum and her friend that were coming. I double booked them. Now, as I say, thankfully, obviously my mum was going to understand and just sit in the balcony level. But I thought I had saved it. And then I looked at the sheet and there were literally the same number, like the same seat right beside each other in the rows. I don't know how I missed that. But anyway, that was the only real mistake I made, I think, which, with all the things I was keeping track of, wasn't too bad, I think. Okay, the other thing I think I might do differently that is starting to make me excited about maybe doing this again next year is I would love to have the opening and the closing of the film be duets, or ideally 2 pianos, 8 hands. Wouldn't that be cool? That's just something I've been thinking about and going, oh, I wonder, could we manage that? Like having some ensemble pieces at the open and the close, I think it would have an even bigger impact and be even more fun. It worked out great the way it was with solo students and like teacher-student duets, but yeah, I think it could be fun with an ensemble, either for the open or for the close of each film, or maybe both, or just for some of them. Not sure. Okay, I think I have answered all the questions as I've been going, so let me know if you've any others. Overall, it was just, it was fantastic. It went really well. Our venue were so lovely to work with. Like, honestly, they have been so fantastic. Obviously, you're an international audience, so it's not particularly useful to recommend the Stella to you. But if you're ever in Dublin, go to the Stella, because they were fantastic to work with. Yeah, I think it was just such a good experience for the students. I think learning to adapt what you're playing to a length of time and to like changing circumstances, like the film wasn't the exact length it was supposed to be, is such great practice for real world music. Like if you actually play gigs or whatever you're doing, you need to be adaptable. You need to be able to change things and make things work based on the situation. It's also great just for students who do feel really under the spotlight when they're up at the front of a concert to just enjoy just playing. And everyone is watching a film. Yeah, they're still listening to you and there's that pressure, but there's not the like, all eyes are on you feeling that you get at a concert. So it's a very different style of playing. For me, honestly, it was more relaxing. I had put in, like, the stress of this event for me was all before it, really, because I put in a lot of organizational time so that on the day, it wasn't very stressful. I didn't feel huge butterflies going into it. I was excited to see everyone and see them perform. I wanted to obviously play my best for the duets I was playing with students, but that was it. I got to just really enjoy it. Like I was standing on hand just in case anything happened, but really nothing did. Nothing major came up. It all went pretty smoothly. Parents and students seemed to be delighted and everyone played excellently. Like obviously there's always going to be a few hiccups in people's playing, but overall they kept it going. No one had any major wobbles. It just went great. I highly encourage you to give this a go if you're thinking, hey, I might like to do this. I'd also suggest you go check out Joy Moran's blog, Color in My Piano. Just had to make sure I got the right color. Color in My Piano, because I think she just blogged about her silent film events she's been doing, and hers are completely different in style to mine. And she did it over several weekends, several different smaller events. So, I mean, check that out too if you want more inspiration in this line. I know Joy has also published some music that is a good fit for this kind of event. So definitely if we do it again, I'll be checking that out too. And just a great experience. And I think in a way more enjoyable for parents. I think that's really what I was getting from their feedback was, I got to sit and have fun with my kids playing. A concert, I'm proud of, like, not that they said it in these words, but this is the feeling I was getting. Like, a concert, I'm proud of them for getting up there, enjoy the music, fine. But I'm not, like, sitting there laughing at a comedy film, and they're part of that. It was a completely different experience. So, definitely to be repeated at some point. I'm just not going to commit to the date yet. Thank you all so much for sticking with me. If you have any follow-up questions about this and you're thinking about putting on one yourself, please reach out. I'm happy to help and share my experience and anything I can, any insights I can give. It doesn't have to be big like this. It could just be in your living room with a projector or on your TV. You know, it could be a piano party just for your kids. It doesn't have to be this mega thing in a cinema. That's just what I chose to do with this idea. But I hope you've enjoyed hearing about it, and I will see you back here next week. If you liked this episode, you would absolutely love Vibrant Music Teaching membership. We have the support and the training you need to take your teaching further. Join us today by going to vmt.ninja and signing up. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast. I hope you loved it, and I wanted to pop on here one more time to remind you about our event. It's happening in Cincinnati this July, and you can get all the details at vibrantmusicteaching.com/turbo. See you there.